It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And in the past week, I have not seen much, I guess, of a phenological note. Pardon me. On Sunday, I was going over to my father-in-law's to help him build a fire in his machine shed. And I had 35 degrees below zero, and I had this following note. Beginning at 8 p.m. on the 5th of February and continuing until 4 p.m. yesterday, the daily high did not climb above 0 degrees, and that is like 236 hours at my house of sub-zero temperatures. I ruined it yesterday afternoon at 4 o'clock by climbing to 1.7 degrees above zero. So hardly a cause for celebration, but that cold is hopefully behind us. It is mid-February and the sun is shining pretty brightly. You're going to notice it coming up in the next few minutes, and it's going to be up for over 10 hours today. We are moving toward the solar equinox coming up in mid-March, probably a month from now, and by then we will have 12 hours of sunlight per day, and it's going to really start rapidly changing, so watch that. Another note that I had, and this corresponds with Phenology and the National Phenology Network, pardon me, they ask that we submit observations. I don't usually submit them through the dead of winter, but about this time of year, I start up again. And of course, all of my responses are no, that has not happened or is not happening. There are no leaves out, no flowers, no nothing like that. So, but they like to have that series of answers of no, so that they know when things begin. And one of the things that I suspect will be beginning in the next week, perhaps after this stretch of cold weather, I think that if you look at an aspen, a trembling aspen tree in your neighborhood, you may see within the next 7 to 10 days that the buds are going to pop open. Now, the aspen belongs to the willow family, and most of us are familiar with the pussy willows, and there are a few pussy willows that come out late in November, early December, and then just hold stasis. They just are these fuzzy little white buds that just sit there all winter, and it'll be early April before they begin to show any signs of activity. But the aspen buds are closed until about the last week of February, first part of March. I have seen it as early as late January in some years, but typically it's mid to late February that the aspen buds open up. And you need binoculars or a spotting scope, or maybe you've got one that's got limbs that come down close to the ground and you can actually walk up and look at it. But if you check out the aspens in your area, the trembling aspens, quaking aspens, the ones that probably get called popple by most people, you may find some with these little gray fuzzy buds on them. And those are the beginnings of the flowers. And typically, I think the males flower first and the female flowers open a bit later. So check the aspens in your neighborhood. Maybe in the next week to 10 days, you'll see some signs of spring. I did see a really nice sundog on Sunday morning. Just the 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock version, one on the left and one on the right of the sun. And that is something that typically happens in the wintertime because the sun angle has to be just right in order to spark those bright dots of rainbow light on either side of the sun. It's sunlight hitting hexagonal ice crystals that are supported in the atmosphere. And when it hits at just the right angle, you get these bright lights and kind of a rainbow effect on the ground that you can observe. I could see a faint line of what would be termed a perihelical arc, which would be a circle, almost a circular rainbow around the sun. But it was just not enough ice in the sky, I suspect. I have been out and checking out the birds, of course, around my house. It's the same crew that comes to the feeder every day. I haven't seen the evening grosbeaks this week, and that's a little distressing, but perhaps we just haven't been at the feeder at the same time. But I have enjoyed the evening grosbeaks through most of the winter. Other birds seen, of course, at the feeder are the white and red-breasted nuthatches and the chickadees, of course, and the blue jays and that crowd, the woodpeckers, the hairy, the downy, and the pileated. But a lot of that has just been kind of, it's been really quiet. When it gets into the temperatures that we were having this last week, it's survival out there. And those animals have to eat constantly in order to have enough food in them to survive. So a chickadee, for example, not very much weight there, got a half inch of feathers or surrounding it that it can fluff out and kind of hold the heat in. But if he gets wet, or if he gets wind into a spot where the wind will ruffle his feathers, he's going to get cold. And undoubtedly, some chickadees perished in this last cold spell. But enough will survive to carry on the race. So we aren't going to be without chickadees. But this cold weather, it is absolutely critical that those birds have high protein, high fat foods that they can access on a regular basis in order to keep themselves warm, because it is the food that they eat that keeps them warm. I don't have red poles at my feeder this year, but I have read in the past that the red pole is a bird that can store food in its crop, and then sort of during the night when it is cold, it can kind of push that food through its gizzard and get the heat, the latent heat that's in that food, to keep its body warm. Chickadees are cavity nesters, and they will huddle. They will literally pack a cavity with the more than, you know, a few birds and share some heat back and forth. So that's kind of one way that they sort of survive this very, very cold weather that we're having. Ravens and crows, who knows? I mean, I know they sit in, they nest or roost in thick stands of pine or spruce or balsams. They find a good spot where it's nice and thick and try to stay out of the wind. But I certainly wouldn't trade places with any of them. I have heard crows calling this past week and seen them flying. So I know that they're around and they're doing what they need to do to stay warm and stay healthy. On Sunday, I was sitting comfortably in a chair in my living room about 4:30 in the afternoon, and an owl, a barred owl, came in and landed on one of the gate posts that I have in my garden, and I was observing it, and it sat there for a couple of minutes, and then it flew off, and I couldn't see it anymore from the window. And about a half hour later, it dropped down the face of my house. I just happened to be looking out the window, and woof, this owl fell down into the snow below my bird feeder, paused for about 5 or 10 seconds, and then flew off. And as it flew off, I saw that it was carrying away probably a vole. I couldn't tell if it was a vole or a mouse, but it was under the snow, and that is the habitat of the vole. And so I suspect that it was probably a vole that the owl captured right there. And I have no great love for those small animals that invade the home and create messes. Voles aren't usually those. It's usually the mice. But at any rate, I didn't begrudge the owl his dinner. And I hope that he sticks around. He can have all the voles he can catch. My final note, yesterday I was driving from town into back to home, and I saw the only birds I saw flying yesterday afternoon were pileated woodpeckers, and I saw four birds, two, one following another, and then two individuals. And it was quite interesting. And then couple that with the fact that I had a note from Dave Lorenz about pileated woodpeckers. And then I got a video of a pair of pileated woodpeckers on a feeder that were sort of jousting one another, playing with one another. It's courtship. And you can hear them calling. You can hear them knocking on trees. They find a tree that has the right sound, and they will bang out a message to other pileated woodpeckers in the neighborhood to stay away. And it becomes a pretty active time of year for pileated woodpeckers. Reading from from the Life Histories of North American Woodpeckers by Arthur Cleveland Bent. And this book is quite old. Most of the notes in here come from the early 1900s, 100 years ago for the most part. But they are absolutely spot on in terms of the behavior of these birds. And reading about the pileated woodpecker and its habits this time of year in the area of food, a fellow by the name of Vickers, who in 1910 wrote the following: "Like the flicker, the pileated woodpecker is a great lover of ants, which accordingly occupies a large place in its bill of fare. So to dine on the big black timber ants, which are his special delight, he drives holes to the very heart of growing forest trees, tapping the central chamber of the colony, where in winter he finds dormant swarm unable to move and feasts upon them at his leisure. And the logcock makes no mistakes. Though man might find no outward sign of an ant tree, doubtless that strong formic smell, coupled with the experience in sounding tree trunks, as a man tells a ripe watermelon by the plunk of it, enables him to not only find the tree, but what is more remarkable, to drive his hole with such precision that he taps the heart of the community." And the other note that I found really interesting there, this is kind of interesting reading, the word logcock, and that is that was one of the names given to the pileated woodpecker. But Bent writes in here about the name. And he said, Catesby depicted the bird in southern form and called it the large red-crested woodpecker. Linnaeus, citing Catesby as his source, named it for its purpose, pileatus or pileatus, crested. Following Linnaeus, the English naturalist Latham began in 1781 to publish his General Synopsis, and he, lacking knowledge of the bird in its haunts and finding Catesby's circumlocution unwieldy, took from Linnaeus's Latin as a name from common usage, pileated woodpecker. The indications are that Latham coined the name. Certainly he gave it currency. The bird already possessed a common name, and it is a pity that Latham did not know it. In its native land, it was and still is commonly called the logcock. That is a good name, apt, picturesque, and widely used. Wilson knew it well enough, and so did Audubon, and they would have done well had they given it a place as the established vernacular name. But Wilson, under Bartram's tutelage, followed Latham and tried to make a stand for logcock. And others have since tried, but in vain. And now we have this splendid creature, a dull piece of pedantry, remains hopelessly fixed. So just a comment about how the name of the pileated woodpecker came about, which is kind of interesting. I think logcock has a certain ring to it. I agree. I think it has a certain nice tone to it to describe the pileated woodpecker. We are blessed to have pileated woodpeckers, and our Christmas bird counts over the years have shown an increase in their numbers over the last 30 years, mostly because the forest is recovering that was done here years and years and years ago, and now the logcock is finding his place, and I'm happy to have him back. That's the Phenology Show for this week. As always, if you have comments, questions, or observations you'd like to share, please get in touch with us.